I'd like to share with you very briefly about how this theme for our worship this fall that we're calling FaceTime, the Art of Radical Hospitality. I want to share with you how this theme came to be. Several months ago, I was beginning to prepare for this season and the messages of this fall, and I turned to a resource that I use about half of the time over the course of the year that's called a lectionary. Lectionary is a guide to the reading of Scripture during worship through the year, and one of the gifts of the lectionary is that it takes us to places that we might not otherwise go. And as I looked through the lectionary readings for this fall, I noticed the readings from the Gospel of Mark, and as I read through the readings from the Gospel of Mark, I noticed that the theme of hospitality was raised over and over again, and I noticed that the incredible hospitality of Jesus was raised again and again, and his call to disciples to extend hospitality to one another in the world. So I took that idea to our worship planning team, and Pastor Ron came up with the title FaceTime, emphasizing our face-to-face encounters and our call to radical hospitality. These readings through the Gospel of Mark take us sometimes to some difficult places, but always, always addressing in one way or another the theme of hospitality. And so this morning, we are in Capernaum. We are in a little home in Capernaum, gathered together with the community of Jesus, his disciples, the 12, and a handful of others who are gathered there this morning. They are tired. They've been on the road for a while, and they have been wandering through the dusty streets of Galilee, and now their feet are propped up on the coffee table. They're leaning back, and they're taking in the words of Jesus as he's teaching them. Coincidentally, in the Gospel of Mark, very often the teaching of Jesus takes place in homes, emphasizing the hospitality practiced of the disciples and the teaching that belonged to those settings. And on this particular occasion, Jesus is looking at his disciples gathered here in the home, perhaps some men and some women, members of the community of Jesus, and it is perhaps with a nod to a child who is there with them. We know there's a child in the story we went through last week. Jesus took a child and set a child amongst them, perhaps with a little nod to the child. Perhaps Jesus looks across and he notes Mary Magdalene, who may be in the gathering this morning, and perhaps with a bit of a nod to her. He then looks around to the rest of his followers and he says, "Whoever causes one of these little ones, these vulnerable ones, who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him to have a millstone tied around his neck and to be thrown into the sea." There is a knowing look on the face of disciples now. They sense the importance of this moment. If any of them had been texting their buddies leading up to this moment, they've closed their phones now. There's no more texting in this moment. They sense the importance of this particular moment. They know that a millstone is a large stone on which the women would place the grain, usually in the mornings. They would come out with a smaller stone, and they would crush the grain, and they would ground it down into flour. A millstone was a large, heavy stone. And here's a hint to its use in this particular passage. It is not a flotation device. Jesus says, if any of you would cause one of these little ones, one of these vulnerable ones who believe in me to stumble, if you would be the cause of their stumbling, it would be better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck as a necklace and to go for a swim in the Sea of Galilee than that. Now, it's important to understand that this is the context of these passages. Jesus is speaking about the influence that people have with people, particularly with the most vulnerable members of the community. This is the context in which Jesus is speaking, and this is in the context in which I believe we should hear the words to follow. Jesus says, if your hand causes you to sin, that is, if your hand is the cause of you being a stumbling block to one of these vulnerable members of the community, cut off your hand. Because it would be better for you to go into life with one hand than it would be to be thrown into hell where the fire never ends. If there was anybody eating Doritos up until this moment, they have stopped now. Jesus has their full attention. They know this word hell that is translated in our Bibles as hell. They know that this is the word Gehenna. This is the word Jesus used. It is a proper name. It is a name used to describe a valley just outside of Jerusalem where the trash heaps were thrown. It was a huge dump just outside of Jerusalem, and because they were constantly burning it to keep the refuse from becoming too large, the fire never ended there. It is this word to describe the dump that Jesus used. It would be better for you to be thrown into the dump where the fire never ends than it would be to cause one of these little ones to stumble. They're listening intently now, and Jesus says, and if it's your foot, if it's your foot that causes you to sin, if it's your foot that causes one of these little ones to stumble, slice off your foot. It would be better for you to go hopping into life than it would be to be thrown into Gehenna. And if it's your eye that causes you to sin and to mislead your brother or your sister, pluck out your cotton-picking eye. Because it would be better to enter into the kingdom with one eye than it would be to be tossed into Gehenna with two. Do you get the feeling that this is an important moment in the teaching of Jesus? Disciples, the community of Jesus gathered together around this little home, they are leaning forward now. He has their full and absolute and complete attention. Millstones, fire that never stops burning, Gehenna, eyeballs, hands, feet, whoo! What in the world would inspire Jesus to use language so graphic as this? What situation would cause Jesus to use words so stern as the words that he uses in this text? Well, a situation in which people are knit together into a community and a fabric of relationships. A circumstance in which human beings are connected to one another in a sort of a spider web connection of relations, where some of the people in that spider web of connections have influence on the lives of other people in those spider web of connections, and the influence that can be practiced by some of those people in those spider web of connections can have devastating impacts for other people. In other words, a situation exactly like ours. I want to step back for just a moment. I want to ask you to notice something about these tough words of Jesus. These words of Jesus are addressed to the church. That is so important. These words of Jesus are addressed to the followers of Christ. These words of Jesus are not some words that we take a little mirror and we hold it up and we turn it a little bit to distract the words so that they point to the world. These words are addressed to the followers of Jesus. They're addressed to us. Strong, tough, graphic language of Jesus used to address us. And they're used to address those of us who are part of the community of Christ, the church, who have an influence on one another and an influence on the small ones, the children, the handicapped, those who are vulnerable in our midst, for good or for evil. I'd like to share with you a simple fact of our lives. We may or may not like this fact. That doesn't make any difference. This is a simple fact of our lives. We are knit together in a web of relationships, whether we like it or not. The moment we were born into families, we were born into communities. You had cousins, you had aunts and uncles, you had parents, you have people who you know. From the time that you were born, you were knit together in a web of relations. Through your life, you have grown up and you have become part of larger webs of relationships by which we are knit together like a spider's web. Whether we like it or not, we influence one another. We just do. That's the kind of world in which we live. In the spider web of connections, there is a little place that you inhabit. And what you do in this spider web of connections, affects somebody else in a spider web as well. If you live in one way, it may affect them for good. If you live in another way, it may affect them for evil. And in this spider web of connections, what we do with our lives has an impact, especially on the vulnerable members of the communities. And Jesus says, if your hand causes you to sin, to have the impact in the little spider web of connections where you are causing another vulnerable member of the community to stumble into death instead of lean into life, if that's the sort of impact you're having, goodness, get yourself a big necklace because you're going to need it. Do you see the importance of these words of Jesus on this particular occasion? Do you see the impact that we have on one another? Several months ago, I heard an interview on NPR, a program called Fresh Air with Terry Gross. This particular day, Terry was interviewing a man who is, you might say, in recovery from being part of a white supremacist group. Thank God he was in recovery. And he told his story about growing up, the things that went on in his life, how it was that he became a part of the skinhead group, and what he had done with his life. And friends, it was chilling to hear this man describe the impact of his life upon other people. But equally as chilling to hear the impact that he had had on others was to hear him describe the people who had had an impact on him. Now, it wasn't that he wasn't taking responsibility for his decisions, because he was, but to listen to this fellow describe the people who had influenced the sort of formation that had taken place in his life, my goodness. He described how he had grown up in an abusive home. He described how he grew up in a home when he was regularly beaten by his father and mistreated and abused. And I'm going to use a word for what's taking place in this situation. It is the word spiritual formation, but it's the wrong spirit. He described how he was being formed spiritually as a child in this home. He described how throughout his entire life, he could never remember a time when he had felt accepted and loved. Could never remember a time. There was, you might say, hospitality in reverse going on in his life. Inhospitality. Radical inhospitality that he had never been included, never felt welcome into any group that he'd ever been a part of. He remembers the day when he was in high school and he went to high school and he got beaten up by some members of a minority group and had a powerful forming effect in his life. He never forgot that experience. And then he remembered the day that a cousin of his came to him and said, I want to introduce you to some friends of mine. This cousin of his had shaved his head. And so he went with this cousin of his to a meeting that this cousin was a part of, and he said for the first time in his life, he felt included. He told the story about the day that he'd been beaten up when he was in high school, and it was like telling a testimony. Everybody around him came around him in support and encouragement, and it was shortly after that that, as a sign of belonging to the group, that he shaved his head. He became a part of the skinhead group, white supremacist group. He advanced in this group so far that he became a notorious national leader, wanted by the FBI. He remembers a day when he and this group of people went into a bar to start a fight, specifically went with the purpose of wanting to start a fight. They walked in looking for minority people, Jews, Hispanics, African Americans, gays, and they found them, and they started fights. And he said he remembers when in one moment he was about ready to get the tar beaten out of him when a group of people from his group jumped in on his behalf, and it was the first time in his life, his entire life, he'd ever had anybody who had his back. And he described a lifetime of being formed. Do you see where this is going? He was being spiritually formed by the influences in his life, and every step along the way, that formative journey was one that led him not to the way of life, not to the way of hope, not to the way of goodness and righteousness, but to the way of death and the way of hatred and the way of judgment. We influence one another. We just do. It's the kind of world in which we live. We influence one another. And Jesus warns us, for heaven's sakes, if your judgmentalism, your snooty judgmentalism, is having that impact that it turns other people away from following in the way of Jesus, chop your judgmentalism off. If your gossip, your condescending gossip and speaking negatively and evil of other people, is causing them to fall away from the way of Jesus, for heaven's sakes, chop your gossip off. If your lustfulness is causing people to look, causing you to look at people as second-class citizens, and it is encouraging other people to look at people as objects, for heaven's sakes, do something about that. If your self-centered ambition is going on in ways that are causing other people to stumble and to fall, for heaven's sakes, stop being so self-centered. You may think it's all about you, but it's not all about you, because we're connected. We're in a web. We're spun together in a web of relations, and what you do in the little spot that you inhabit affects what happens in the little spot that somebody else inhabits, particularly the vulnerable ones. Well, it might be that you're starting to feel a little bit like the characters in this particular worship service. The preacher is saying, "And he said unto them, bad dogs, no, no." And by the way, the caption, which you cannot read under this one, is "Hellfire and Dalmatians." We're sitting in a worship setting, in a teaching setting of Jesus and his disciples. They're gathered together in this little home in Capernaum. He has their full attention now. They are leaning forward and they are taking in every word that he says. As they look across the room and they look perhaps at Mary Magdalene, the woman from whom seven demons had been cast out, yes, she's one of the vulnerable ones. Their lives will influence Mary. They look at a child who is gathered here in the midst of them. Yes, yes. They look perhaps at others that are gathered here in this room, that their lives will influence because they are bound together in these sort of ways. And it might be as we're looking out across these disciples this morning, it might be that we see one of them looking a little bit pensive, thinking to himself, "Why in the world did I sign up for this? What in the world made me sign up for this? I could have done something stupid and ridiculous like be an Ohio State Buckeye fan. And here I am, taking in the graphic language of Jesus. Why did I sign up for this?" And the answer is, they signed up for it because they knew that Jesus Christ had called them to a noble purpose. They knew it in their bones. They knew that Jesus Christ had called them to a noble, noble purpose. You see, in the words immediately following these that Ben didn't read this morning, Jesus describes them as salt. He says, the fire saltens you. In other words, as you go through the hardships of life, they're not going to be to no purpose. The hardships of life are going to fire you and salt you so that you're taking on a unique taste. You're going to be salty people. Jesus says, he goes on to say to them, if salt has lost its saltiness, what good is it? What good is it to be a person who has lost his flavor, his seasoning? And then he says to them, have salt in yourselves. Be seasoned. Be who you really are. Don't be watered down by the world in which you live. And then he says, be at peace with one another. Those are the closing words of Jesus in this story. Be at peace with one another. Live at shalom with one another. That's the word Jesus would have used. Live at shalom with one another. Let shalom break out amongst you. We have this little tiny narrow idea of what peace is. We think peace is just sort of getting along and not fighting with each other, you know, or feeling kind of comfortable in one another's presence. In the Bible, shalom, peace, has such a big and powerful meaning. In the Bible, shalom means wholeness in the community. It means in those who belong to God, there is a sense of wholeness. There's a relational connectedness among them that gives life to one another who are part of that community. In the Bible, shalom means a powerful, powerful way of connecting in which God is the center and love and hospitality, extraordinary hospitality are present. Where there is shalom, everybody in the community is better for being part of that community. And Jesus says, be at peace. Let shalom break out amongst you because you're salted. You're disciples. This isn't some new thing. It's not some new word. It's what God had always called his people to. Do you remember way, way, way back in the Old Testament, way back in Genesis, when there was the flood that covered the whole earth, the earth had become so wicked and so full of violence that God had brought about the judgment of the flood, and God told Noah to build the ark and to put the animals. We all know the story. What we forget so easily is that the whole purpose of the creation of that ark and the people who were on the ark was to be a remnant, a people in the world who will live by shalom. And because they do, will infect the larger world in which they live by their shalom. When God called and created the people called Israel, it wasn't because he just liked them. It wasn't because he just thought one day, I'm going to call a chosen people and everybody else will be unchosen. Ha! God called Israel to be salty, to learn what it means to have shalom, so that their shalom would infect the rest of the world. Go be a blessing to the whole world, God called Abraham and Sarah. And now, Jesus has his disciples here, and he says, fellas, be salty. If you lose your saltiness, what good are you? Be salty. Be at peace. Let shalom break out amongst you, so that as it does, you will infect the world, because this is what God wants for the whole world. God wants shalom for this world. And then, it's not as though he just teaches them and stops there. The very next story in Mark's gospel begins with the words, and Jesus crossed over the Jordan River into the region of Judea. And that little detail may not seem that important, but believe me, it is, because in the Gospel of Mark, what that means is that the end has begun. From this moment on, Jesus is moving toward the cross. From this moment, he's moving toward the cross, and when he arrives at the cross, please understand that what is taking place on that cross is that all of the world's unpeace and all of the world's violence and all of the world's inhospitality is taken upon Jesus' back. And in resurrection, he overwhelms it by love. And these disciples that are gathered together in Capernaum, in this little home in Capernaum, they couldn't have known all of that just yet. It would be a handful of days before they would see and realize that Jesus isn't just teaching them to practice shalom. He'll be with them, and his spirit will be among them, and he will be before them and behind them and around them and within them in the power of his resurrection to empower shalom to break out in their relationships. I was driving into Grand Rapids this week. Monday morning, I was going to a conference in Grand Rapids. It started at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 stupid o'clock in the morning. So I'd gotten up at 5:30 and had my breakfast and showered and was making my way to Grand Rapids. And as I was driving into Grand Rapids, I was a little bit late. And I was looking at my watch and I realized that it was going to be very, very tight whether or not I was going to get there on time. I really wanted to get there on time. And the freeways were getting fuller as I was getting closer and closer to Grand Rapids. And I felt myself going into competition mode. Do you know what I'm saying? Amazing how courageous we can be when we're surrounded by 2,000 pounds of metal, isn't it? I found myself developing strategies to cut off other cars and to beat other people to the punch and how I could get there ahead of others and how I could cut this car off. I was developing these strategies in my mind. And as I was driving in on this freeway, I just happened to look up at a great big billboard. It was nothing but words, no pictures, just words from the Psalms. The words said, seek peace and pursue it. Amen. See, this is what Jesus is getting at. Be salty. Don't have the kind of influence where you cause the least of these to stumble. Practice shalom and pursue it. Be salty. Friends, I want to remind you of something you already know. You are called to a noble purpose. You are not just so many pounds of flesh and blood that one day are going to decay in a coffin and that's all there is to you. You are called with eternal intent, and you are called with eternal purpose. And you are called to be at peace with one another, to practice peace and pursue it, to let shalom break out, to be salty because you're disciples, because you belong to Jesus, because he is your Lord. And it's not as though it's all up to you. He's with you and he's in you. By the power of resurrection, the Spirit is already present, prompting you, guiding you, and giving you the power to do it. So you don't need a lot of guidance from me because you've already got the Spirit leading you. But let me just point in a few very simple directions, a few very simple guides to people who want to be salty. One is, think about the whole web of which you are a part and not just your little place in it. In other words, think about your impact upon the whole and not just what's good for you. Your life is influencing people whether you want it to or not. You can act self-centered throughout your life as though this is all that there is, but believe me, when you do, it impacts people over here and here and here and here and here. Draw back and think about the whole. To practice peace, to be at peace, to let shalom break out, doesn't mean we're always just nice and smiling. Sometimes groups of people have to stand back and ask, do we need to have a good argument to work through this thing, to work through to shalom? Every once in a while, my wife and I, we joke about this. We say, we're fighting for our marriage. But we really mean it. Sometimes you have to engage tough conflict for the sake of the web, the relationships that bind us together. So draw back, not just the little space that you inhabit. What is required of you to contribute to the wholeness of the whole web of your family, of this church, of this community in which we live? Think about the whole. Secondly, be responsible for the little tiny spot on the web that you inhabit. You're not responsible for this part of the web over here. That is, it's not up to you how this part of the web responds, or this part, or this part. Be responsible for you. If everybody else around you is reacting with violence, take a deep breath and be at peace. If everybody else around you is using gossip, take a deep breath and let go of those gossipy words. If everybody else on the web is being judgmental, take a deep breath. Leave judgment to God. God alone is the one who has the intelligence to handle that. Let that be somebody else's problem. Just be responsible for the piece of the web in which you inhabit. And finally, as a final guidance this morning, I just want to say, you'll hear this from me every Sunday. In order to be at peace with one another, we must be at peace in our own hearts. And this is where the radical hospitality of God makes all the difference in the world. When you were a prodigal, he threw a party for you and welcomed you home. When you had forgotten him, his grace was extended to you through the cross of Jesus, and he said, "Welcome, daughter. Welcome, son. You are mine." I believe the most important work any of us ever do in our lives is the work of spiritual formation. It is the work of centering our lives in the love and power of God through Jesus and being formed by God's radical hospitality so that we can extend it to others and practice peace and pursue it. Would you pray with me, please?